Hello, I'm Andy Zaltzman. Welcome to the News Quiz. Hello, in a week dominated by heated discussions about the unnecessarily joyless negativity with which this campaign is being conducted, a general sense of national decline, tedious stalemates, public dissatisfaction with how things are going, and squabblings over who is best for the number 10 role, we're actually going to switch focus on the News Quiz away from the football and onto politics. Our teams this week, well, Tom Cruise has been in London recently, just a short visit. So in honour of his... In honour of his films and paying tribute to A, the state of the Conservative Party, and to B, the enthusiasm of the British voting public at the prospect of a Labour victory in next Thursday's election, we have Team Mission Impossible Fallout versus Team Bored on the 4th of July. On Team Fallout, we have Stuart Mitchell and Dalisa Chaponda. And on Team Bored, we have Jeff Norcott and the political editor of The Spectator, Katie Balls. Stuart and Dalisa can have first go at our first question. Wednesday evening saw the last of the TV debates between Sunak and Starmer. 62% of viewers described the debate as what?
Was it more depressing than EastEnders?
Ideal opportunity to walk the dog. If my dog hears the word election debate, he gets his own lead. No.
I think it was actually frustrating.
Correct.
Right. And I was worried, though... Did they mean regular frustration or sexual frustration? I didn't know that Sunak and Keir Starmer are like the current himbos.
I thought you meant sexual, like between them. Like.
Well, that's how the UK finally gets united.
An exciting new series of Yes, Prime Minister. Katie, presumably you've been contractually obliged as a journalist to watch every single second of these debates. How did you find this one and the debates in general?
Well, there's only been two actual head-to-heads where they're both on stage at the same time, so you see them interacting more. But I feel like we all feel as though we've probably heard enough from both Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer, in the sense that they get asked the same questions and you don't necessarily get more back. I think with the head-to-heads, it just can often feel as though, you know, Rishi Sunak's getting really aggressive, and then Keir Starmer looks a little bit as though he just doesn't want to put, you know, a foot wrong.
It was like Rishi, he does always come out with that energy of, you know, in Apprentice where they got a sales task and he's got a... It's like he's trying to sell gloves, but for feet. That's generally... I'll say fair play to Rishi. With the way that his campaign has gone, I'm amazed that he went out there. If that was me... I'd have been, you know, like when a kid doesn't want to go to primary school on the first day, I would have just been holding on to my mum's leg going, no, please, can David Cameron do it? I don't want to go out there. Starmer was like, he wasn't great. I don't think that this is his strength, debates in this format. He sort of looked like he'd had a really ill-considered nap. Starmer's massively evasive as well, because he just doesn't want to say anything at this point. And he sort of said things like, well, we won't tax working people. We like, well, does that mean you're going to tax everyone else? You know, and I just always kind of thought, because in your real life, if you spoke to people like that when asked a question, it wouldn't work, would it? People said, oh, Jeff, are you going to spend your son's college fund going to Vegas with the lads? I go, look, I've been very clear. I will not touch his piggy bank from Nanny June. And I'm definitely not going to touch his regular savings account.
I think clearly you have been faithful to your wife, because I answer questions like that. Don't answer the question they ask. Answer the question you want to answer.
Let me be clear. Yeah, I did not look at your friend Michelle's swimwear pictures on Facebook. Okay, I shouldn't have used the name there.
I think for me, the best moment was when my gran just woke up halfway through and just said, where's the repair shop? I mean, that was a big thing. They took that off air. But you're right, in terms of Keir Starmer, I think he should have had a penalty. Because he was playing dirty tactics, I thought, Rishi Sunak. I think he came out really incensed. He came out so incensed, he had the energy of someone who looked like he was pledging his case to get a face-to-face doctor's appointment. I mean, he came out, didn't he? He came out ready to rock. I mean, he was so incensed at one point, if he'd have been standing in a Glaswegian pub, he would have been kicked out. The bit I actually thought, oh dear, is when there was a lovely disabled woman that stood up and spoke, and you could see Rishi taking frantic notes, and it wasn't to reply, it was just to say if she was good enough to come to the debate, she was good enough to work.
According to Keir Starmer in the debate, what will take, quotes, literally 300 years?
Was it for Scotland to make it through the group stage?
Oh, is it getting all the people who are waiting to be processed on planes to Rwanda?
That's correct. At the current rate of catapultage, is that the term for...
Can I just say, BBC Verify, I thought was very good, and they verified this fact, that it would, in fact, take 300 years to get the migrants to Rwanda if they went from Manchester Airport.
Were you unimpressed with Tom? I mean, because feel that, like Jeff said, it's not his natural... I mean, if only he'd had some sort of job that involved, like, talking and trying to persuade people who were listening to him.
But I also think that directness doesn't win, right? I think this is the actual thing is, like, would you elect 100% honest politician? People think they want it. You don't want that. You don't want someone to be like, I have no idea what to do. We want someone to lie to us just more convincingly than the two of them. I want a convincing lie. Elect Judi Dench.
Let's look at some of the keywords from the debate. We'll take one from each leader of the words they used most often. For Sunak, what keyword did he use, beginning with the letter S?
Was that supercalifragilistic? My ratings are atrocious.
I think it was surrender, right?
Yes, correct.
But
surrender.
Did you see the ad? So they have an ad which they're running, which is like people with their hands up, and it says, don't surrender to Labour. But it looks like a threat. Like, I feel like the subject is, or else. We will round you up and shoot you.
He said it so many times, you're thinking, hang on, has he got a little spread bet thing going on here? Don't...
No, it felt as though there'd probably been a focus group and surrender had been something which had got at least a non-negative response. Right. And then it's like, just keep saying it, just keep going. Yeah.
That's the problem when you hold your focus groups in a sex dungeon.
Is that what the Tories are just reduced to, is words people like? Just say toast. Toast, toast, perfectly buttered toast.
And a key word for Starmer, which word beginning with... C. It's not that. It's not.
I mean, I think it's the same word that they have on the Labour bus, and also the same word they just put anywhere rather than going for a longer slogan, which is change.
I think the amount of debt this country is in, we need as much change as possible. We'll all be looking for it down our sofa in order to survive for the next 5 years. So.
I was reading, like, the manifestos, and I saw that in the Labour one, they're trying to sort of woo the farmers... Right, so they said they're going to ensure that at least half of the food served in schools, hospitals, and prisons would be British. But, like, isn't that torture? Like, give them some flavour, for the love of God.
Oh, national cuisine takes another kick.
Clearly, someone's never tried a chicken and mushroom pot noodle.
Any other personal highlights from the debate?
Yeah, I don't think anything will change now. I think the polls will remain the same. Maybe Ed Davey will shoot himself out a cannon.
Yes, indeed. Sunak and Starmer went once more unto the breach to debase each other and the state of our democracy. If I could sum up the debate in two words, it would be temper, temper. As Starmer continued to temper expectations, extremely successfully, to be fair, the expectations have now almost completely disappeared, and Sunak uncorked his inner strop, furious at what Labour could do to the country if it does the things the Conservatives claim Labour will do, and those things then go the way the Conservatives claim they'll go. So it's a bit of a hard sell for Sunak, but as I said, fair play for him continuing to try. The continuing Tory focus on Tash is the name of my dead dog. she'd have been 41 next year. An audience member asked, are you two really the best we've got to be next Prime Minister? And disappointingly, neither candidate had the guts to say, well, one of us is. Or even, OK, smart ass, why don't you have a pop at it? Moving on now, Work and Pension Secretary Mel Stride this week described what as deeply disappointing?
I think it is, it's the gambling thing, isn't it?
Yes, correct. Do you think this has shifted things at all?
I think it's just added to Tory woes. I think you now speak to those on the campaign, they of the view the campaign is perhaps cursed. Some of that, of course, being self-inflicted. But I think it's cut through, actually, when you speak to candidates, Labour and Tory. They think this is cutting through more than D-Day now. Rishi Sunak this week had to distance himself from Tory candidates, one being his former close aide, who no longer... He's on the ballot paper, but no longer has the official support. Though I think... probably by the time he got near to the end of the week, the fact that a Labour candidate had to have distance put between them and Keir Starmer probably cheered the Tories up a little bit. And now we're trying to define what counts as a bad political bet, because we've had the business minister come out and had to admit that he bet lots of money, but on the Tories winning, which... we can, putting aside if he should have been in charge of business, I think we can conclude from that that's not inside trading.
But I'm curious, the gambling watchdog came over to them for betting, but didn't come after them for, you know, gambling with the economy.
No, no, that's different. That's yeah, as long as you've got a tie on.
It's so it's all fine.
In saying the gambling watchdog, they to get the gambling watchdog out, you have to send off a little artificial rabbit before it, and then they're like...
I think I need to give this scandal another name, because Gamblegate just sounds like a really pretty village in the Yorkshire Dales, doesn't it? I wonder if it does suggest that we don't pay our MPs enough, that they're engaging in these piss-poor scams. And I don't know what's going to happen to the Tories after the election. You just get a knock on the door and there'll be Michael Gove there trying to sell you cleaning products, but looking suspiciously over your shoulder to see the layout of the downstairs. And Andrea Leadsom, you'll be in a pub and she'll just be lifting up the fruit machine going, hold the cherries, hold the cherries!
I mean, you mentioned Michael Gove. I've actually put a bet on him winning the next series of The Traitors. But to be fair, it's not just the Tory party that's been involved in this. It's been all the political parties, and even in Scotland, the Scottish Lib Dem leader, Alex Cole-Hamilton. And if you don't know who that is, well, the Lib Dems are also a political party. So he's admitted as well that he placed bets that some elected SPs and MPs would be elected in these constituents in Scotland. And if he get caught, the only reason he get caught, I think, is because he brought a pen out to sign a document and it was from the bookies.
Amongst those alleged to have placed suspiciously well-founded bets on the surprisingly early date that the surprisingly early election would be surprisingly called include the Prime Minister's private secretary, who put a £2,000 bet on. It was only £100, but let's say £2,000. That's just the way this election goes. The party's chief data officer, the police officer working as part of the Prime Minister's close protection team, two candidates standing for Parliament, one of whom is married to the party's director of campaigns, a horse belonging to a special advisor... I can't really complain about horses betting on humans after all these years. The interim Tory chair, Ray Winston. And according to a rumour that I'm just making up right now, Rishi Sunak himself, although he got the date wrong. Labour has also suspended a parliamentary candidate for betting against himself, clearly a hardened veteran of previous Labour campaigns. It is bizarre, though, the fact that these bets were placed and people didn't think, oh, no, we shouldn't do this. I mean, thinking you could place bets on the election day as a Tory candidate and not get pulled up on it, that, to me, is a similar level of blind naivety as developing a new frothed alpaca blood drink and then being surprised when animal welfare groups and image rights lawyers start to get involved when you launch the Al Pacino. Right. Let's move. The scores are now 8 to Stuart and Deliso and 6 to Katie and Jeff. Let's move on now to Scotland. Stuart, you can have this this question. What has happened in Scotland for the first time in absolutely ages?
Was it a brief resurgence of optimism?
I could hear it surging through you, mate.
Well, I think it's interesting because for the first time, Labour are polling higher than the SNP, which is incredible because we never thought that would really happen. And what I think, in Scotland, roughly a third of people will vote for the party best placed to get rid of the SNP or the Tories. And in England, 33% of voters will vote for whatever party is best placed to also get rid of the Tories. And in both instances, the big winner is likely to be Labour, where a third of the population get a government they don't particularly like just to get rid of one that's here now. I mean, that's like one in three people taking the megabus to bankrupt Ryanair. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. But obviously, in 2015 in Westminster, 56 of the 59 seats went to SNP. And the other three seats were just spares so they could put their feet up. And the negative thing for the SNP is that there's probably less people that will vote SNP, but they'll still vote for independence. And that's the issue they've got, because polls suggest that one in five of independence yes voters will go back to Labour, and the other four out of five will go back to Spain.
I mean, I wonder, Stuart, like, if we sort of overestimated how much the SNP are going to implode, because obviously there are issues under Sturgeon and Humza, but John Swinney, he's a sort of gaffer till the end of the season sort of guy, isn't he? You know, I don't know if he could lead Scotland, but he could get England out of the quarterfinals. I do think he's got that sort of that gritty thing. And Stephen Flynn, he's really articulate. I mean, his policies don't make any sense. He's got no route map to independence and no idea what he'd do when he get there, but... He uses some great phrases, man. And he's also come up with this idea where they said they're going to table a bill, which is they're going to challenge Labour to rule out privatising the NHS, which Labour aren't doing. None of the parties are planning to privatise the NHS. And I thought it's an interesting strategy, isn't it? Just challenge people to rule out doing something bad against stuff you love, you know? Will you rule out a ground invasion against David Attenborough? You're like, what are you talking about?
The other issue is the Scottish Conservative leader, Douglas Ross. He's also a football referee, so as if Tories couldn't be hated enough in Scotland. But he has the lowest approval rating of all leaders in Scotland, at 19% saying that he would do a good job. And they would rather vote for VAR.
Unfortunately, we do have to skip the question about Reform UK's candidates because this is going out before the watershed. One of the key issues in this election campaign is all the key issues that have barely been talked about, the so-called elephants in the room. So in this, our last news quiz before we all vote, we thought we should hear from those elephants. Bring in the elephants! Just hope we don't have another Blue Peter incident. Right, our panellists will choose one of the elephants in the room. The elephant will tell them what undiscussed, avoided or under-the-carpeted election issue they represent. Our panel simply have to translate that issue from elephant into English. Luckily, I speak elephant. Benefits of a private education, it's basically the same as Latin.
I'm African, but I don't speak elephant.
Jeff and Katie, choose your elephant. Do you want elephant A, B, C, D, or E?
What do you think, Katie?
C.
C.
Okay, elephant C. Right, which much overlooked election issue was that?
I think that the elephant sounds disappointed.
Yeah, it sounded like they had hope for deregulation outside the EU, but it hasn't really materialised in the way they thought.
Yeah.
When they...
And I think maybe they thought there'd be a few more trade deals.
They thought that, yeah, there'd be more trade deals and Britain would become like sort of more like Singapore on Thames rather than Brussels by the sea.
Yeah.
Is that our elephant?
That is correct. It is Brexit. Yeah, well done. That's good. Why do you think there's been so little Brexit talk in this campaign?
Well, it's funny because if you ask a politician that, they'll say no one cares about Brexit anymore. But then you think, well, If no one cares, why are you so scared to mention it? Because even the Lib Dems don't want to talk about it very much, and Keir Starmer doesn't want to go anywhere near it because I think the Red Wall voters he's trying to get back. Lots of voters in 2019 didn't like the Labour position. And then Rishi Sunak doesn't massively want to talk about it, even though he's done a tweet or two, because there's lots of voters on the right going to Reform who think he's done a bad job of delivering it. So no one really wants to go near it. And it means they're all kind of being let off the hook because the others don't want to accuse the other, because then they would have to talk about it.
Right.
It is a forbidden word. If you stand in front of a mirror and you say Brexit, Brexit, Brexit.
Nigel Farage appears. Yeah. It's like a political version of Candyman, niche horror, yes. Niche horror reference. With Labour, the accusation with Labour is that they might have to look at some sort of deal with the EU. Starmer just thinks he's going to go in there because he's Keir Starmer, they'll be nice to him. They'll give him a deal with no concessions. But you sort of think, well, Labour are saying that the main thing is grow the economy, but they're not going to borrow more and they're not going to tax more. So the economic plan from Labour is a bit like Tinkerbell, isn't it? It's just, if we just shut our eyes, boys and girls, and we just really, really believe...
I think
we could get 0.7% growth in quarter three if we just believe hard enough. So I think that was one point actually in the debate that Sunak teased out quite well. It's like, you know, the one thing we've learned about the EU is they don't give you half follies for free.
Actually, some breaking news reaching us, actually, although I'm very unlikely that Britain will ever rejoin the EU. Apparently, we have just invited all of the EU members to join the United Kingdom. Well, win-win.
Your move, Brussels.
Stuart and Deliso, choose an elephant. You've got elephant A, B, D or E.
That is D.
D. Let's hear from elephant D.
That's social care, is it?
God, you're quick on that.
It is.
That's amazing.
And I think that's a very interesting one. So it's like there's a crisis in social care, right? They're not enough carers. They're underpaid. At the same time, all the parties are... saying we need to bring down migration. You know who will work for not much money?
Old people.
My people.
Well, it's free in Scotland, isn't it? But to be fair, we don't live as long as you.
I think all the politicians are a bit too scarred from 2017, of course, when Theresa May looked like she was about to win a pretty large majority. It was all... the Tories imagining this happening, and then they launched their manifesto, and there was a social care policy, a realistic one, but one that had some downsides, and it was quickly labelled the dementia tax, and turns out she lost her majority, and there was a hung parliament, and I think it's put off all the parties from going anywhere near it in terms of the tricky conversations.
I mean, yeah, everyone got upset and then forgot we needed a plan, which is sort of poetic in some ways. I mean, the real elephant in the room is not the cost of social care. It's, you know, it's the way that it's currently structured. It's eating into inheritance. Let's just call it what it is. Do you know what I mean? My extension is getting smaller and smaller. And we need a plan.
Well, it's ironic because I don't get my family house until my stepmom goes into care. But you can't put a 55-year-old woman into care. I could do that. Imagine she gets up in the morning and the care assistant says, Jeanette, where are you going? She's like, well, I'm going to work.
You've got elephant A, B or E left?
E.
E? Okay, let's hear from elephant E. Any ideas what that... take a wild guess.
I thought that was a Royal Affairs elephant.
The correct answer. Let's hear the elephant again. Yep, just translating it. The correct answer is, why would you ever play a right-footed player at left back? Yeah, I know it never really works, does it? Oh, I agree, they should be comfortable on both feet at that level. I do agree with that. Yeah, you're right, the offside rule is garbage, yes. Yeah. No, you shouldn't have a goal ruled out because 3 centimetres of your trunk is offside. Oh, I think that's harsh. He's the captain, he'll come good. Now, can I get on with the show? Thank you to all the elephants involved and the politicians who made them possible. Right, that brings us to the end of our election rounds, with the scores now 12 to Katie and Jeff and 13 to Stuart and Deliso. Our final question now, and we're going to start with a 19th century headline for a story about this week. This is from the 1843 edition of True Crime Weekly. But you've got to tell me what story it refers to this week. The headline is, Britain sends prisoner to Australia.
Oh, this is Assange.
Correct, yeah.
Right, who has gone home. And this is the thing is, he was in prison for espionage for 5 years, was it?
12 years staycation in total.
Wow, and I've just got to say, like, if you're in the government of any country, don't tell me anything. Right. What I'm afraid of is I'm a gossip. I would not be able to keep a national secret. I would literally storm out immediately I found out anything. Do you know what Putin did yesterday? I'd be a terrible spy. But the thing which worries...
That is exactly what a spy would say.
What is interesting is I did a gig at an RAF base, and because I'm a foreign national, they had a soldier follow me around everywhere to make sure that I wasn't doing espionage. And like, I'm from Malawi. Even if I stole the plans of a plane, we couldn't build it. We can't afford it.
I mean, I looked at the case of Assange, and you know, I've looked into the history of it, and I think he's guilty. And I say that because he looks like a wrong un, and that is how I base. Yeah, that's how I base a lot of things. You know, first 5 minutes of banged up abroad, I'm like, wrong un. I mean, if he doesn't want people to think he's guilty, don't adopt the look of Draco Malfoy.
Guilty of what is my question?
Just whatever they're saying.
Oh, whatever. Because I don't think he was saying that he didn't do it. I think he was saying it was justified and it's what a journalist should do.
Well, you could say, or use your excuse, say it's just gossip that got out of hand. I just shouldn't have uploaded those 16,000 documents. I'd had some Lambrini and I just felt
like gossip that got out of hand is how most major religions have begun.
He managed to have two children while he was in prison. I just want to ask, how open was this prison? What were they smuggling in there, like pipettes? And then this guy, after he's done 12 years, they made him fly from Stansted. Look, whatever guy's done, no one deserves to be. Please. And then he goes on a private jet, right, from London to Bangkok, then to the Marina Islands, and then to Canberra. So he's free now, but in 6 months he'll get taken out by Greta Thunberg in a kayak.
I think it's a real positive, though, for Rishi Sunak, because finally he gets a plane to leave the country carrying a non-UK national.
So that is the end of the news quiz. Remember to vote hard and vote often next Thursday, and we will be back with a world-exclusive election results show next week. Until then, goodbye. Taking part in the news quiz were Katie Balls, Deliso Shiponda, Stuart Mitchell and Jeff Norcott. In the chair was me, Andy Zaltzman, and additional material was written by Peter Talouche, Tucson Douglas, Mark Granger and Angela Channel. The producer was Sam Holmes, and it was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 4.